Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need. My social media isn't always an echo chamber. I often get into it with people online, and last week was no different. Except, this time, a lot of the people in my replies were people that I respect. We'd all just found out that Yves Ongler had been denied in his bid to become leader, rejected by the NDP vetting committee. So, of course, Twitter was ablaze, and there was some serious discourse happening between comrades. About vetting, about the tactics Yves' team used, and whether or not he deserved to be in the race at all. It was clear we were not all on the same page, which is fine. So, Desmond Cole has come into the studio to see where we differ and where we can find common ground. This isn't our usual format for a show, but it is certainly Blueprints content. We talk about how people approach power, the different goals campaigns set, how the NDP uses vetting to silence people, and how the ways we engage with each other on these topics matter. Just one note, though, before we do start. Since we recorded this discussion, an email has been leaked that highlights one of the issues we bring up, but don't explore quite enough. Lucy Watson, the NDP's national director, has been caught, again, using her position to influence the voice of membership and isolate dissenters. In an email sent to individuals on federal council, Watson urges them to not comment on Angler's rejection. And more relevant to this discussion, she frames their campaign as one of outsiders. She others them. This framing of partisan protest campaigns as one of outsiders who don't belong, who aren't legitimate voices to be heard, is a mistake. I mean, it's a calculated one taken by Watson, one she's used many, many times, but I'm afraid it's one other people are stumbling into. Leadership campaigns are often lauded for bringing in new people, right? That's one of the main goals of candidates, sign up new members. So the issue really isn't that it's folks from outside the party participating, is it? Right? It's about a certain kind of people they don't want to include. Socialists and people who support Palestinian resistance. This, of course, is a sound strategy for NDP brass, who are committed to appealing to liberal and con voters and staying as palatable as possible for capital. But it's not a winning strategy for folks who consider themselves NDP reformists. These are the very folks you'll need at your side if you want to push the party left and hold them accountable. Even if you don't like the campaign or Eid, surely you can see the dangers of discrediting and demonizing people for being outside these centers of power. Not to mention erasing the many long-time actual members working on the campaign. This is how the worst authoritarians were and still are able to divide people. I know it's a time of raised emotions. This leadership race has folks feeling like there's a lot on the line, and they're closing ranks a bit. But for now, maybe let's broaden our perspectives. No matter where you sit on the party, or its vetting, or Eve's, try to receive this conversation with an open mind, and let us know afterwards if anything's changed for you. Welcome back to the studio. Desmond, can you introduce yourself to people, please?
Hi, my name's Desmond Cole. I'm a journalist and author based in Toronto. I work full-time now for The Breach as their senior journalist. I have been following the NDP federal leadership race. Have you been following it at all, Jessa?
No. I mean, I had a discussion with comrades earlier, and we were
fully ready to unpack the race, but all admittingly wishing we weren't. We weren't caught up in it. And yeah, but welcome. Folks might maybe be surprised or maybe fully waiting for this discussion if they've been paying attention to our Twitter feed. We started discussion on there, but it's nearly impossible to do in a productive way, sometimes even in a respective way. So Desmond invited me to have this conversation out in the open. And that conversation, I mean, it has parts, but generally it surrounds the campaign of Ebongler, the mechanisms used to block him, the discussions around it, and yeah, rather than do that over the internet, and since more people than you and I are having this discussion, hopefully you can live vicariously through us and unpack it together with us here today. Before we get started, I mean, like I said to Desmond before we recorded, my bias or even disdain for the NDP will be painfully obvious. I admit, and I might share, there are personal experiences that I bring sometimes productively to this conversation and sometimes very emotionally to this conversation. And so they absolutely influence how I see this and respond to what's happening right now. And some of the arguments around vetting, around, you know, insurgency or protest campaigns, some of these opinions might be Desmond's, they might not be. When I'm talking to him, we're just kind of talking about the issue. We're not owning all of these viewpoints. I mean, unless we openly express them, right? You'll hear us unpack things we'll agree upon and things that maybe we're just going to have to leave and move on at some point, as comrades should do, right? I also might at some point refer to Eves' detractors. I'll try not to do that and be so general, but I will at some point refer to Avi's camp.
That's Avi Lewis, of course, for everybody.
Because I think I felt a lot of the arguments that I wanted to kind of unpack came from there, vocally. So I want people to be clear that I'm not, again, speaking about Desmond. I don't want to call out every comrade by name either. So I just kind of wanted to lay a bit of that groundwork because the vitriol I think that Desmond's facing online right now, maybe a little bit is misplaced, and it can be attributed to like the larger arguments or interactions that are happening around this and not directly with either one of us directly, you know, or individually rather. So did that feel fair, Desmond?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, okay. First of all, I just want to say thank you to you for agreeing to have this conversation, because I'm generally of the belief that we can disagree about most of these issues and not feel like anyone who disagrees is in bad faith or anyone who disagrees has a secret motive that they're kind of hiding. And I feel like the truncated conversations that happen on social media really feed into that. And it's just better to sit down and like be like, what do you mean by that? Why are you saying that? Why aren't you saying this or that? And have a fulsome discussion that doesn't trail off into 30 different areas or have 50 people all trying to have one conversation or five conversations. It just doesn't work for me. And so, you know, you're putting out some disclosures at the beginning too. When I first started talking about the leadership campaign after it had begun, I made it really clear on The Breach that I don't support any of the candidates in this race. I didn't want to cover this race being favorable to one or another candidate. I just wanted to cover the race. I was a member of the NDP about 15 years ago, Jess. I don't know if you know that, but like I signed up in the convention where Mulcair ultimately was the one that got chosen as the leader. And I let my membership lapse after that, and I have never come back. I hope people can understand, but that was the end for me. I've been asked to run several times by the NDP. I've said no every time. I'm interested in covering the NDP, and I'm interested in what they say and do in this country. But I've actually tried really hard not to be invested in particular candidates or like on the party's successes as a whole. That doesn't mean I don't have opinions. I have lots of opinions. But there's been some talk, especially online, that I must be supporting the Avi Lewis campaign because I've had some critiques of the Engler, Eve Engler campaign. And I think it's worth noting, my managing editor at the Breach, Martin Lukacs, is openly supporting and advising Avi Lewis. And I think this very silly thing has happened where people are like, well, that must mean Desmond is, or he's partisan to it, or he's getting pulled in that direction. And I would just say to people, like, I've been talking about this party and being around it for almost 20 years. I don't need to take my cues from somebody who I work with to figure out what I think. In fact, I've felt like I've really made a career being pretty independent of the people that I work for and being willing to even walk away from people that I work for when they try to impose things on me. And that hasn't changed. So I'm very interested in the race and as an observer, but not as a supporter of anyone.
I think that might surprise some people, so I'm glad that you got it out there. We know how association works, not always in the best way. Not that you're trying to disassociate yourself from your comrades, but there was an episode, I think, that focused on the NDP leadership race. I think that in part also tied you to the opinions of your co-host. And that's a tough spot to be in as a podcast interviewer. I understand that tricky spot.
Yeah, I just want, I have my own critiques and I want to be held accountable for the things that I say, not the things that other people say. I think that's pretty fair.
All right. And we're going to hear what those are. I mean, we're not going to get into the nitty gritty of, you know, validating every single thing about Eve Engler or his campaign. But, you know, his is a bit of a case study that allows us to examine some of these broader issues that have been part of the party since it existed, right? So they're not new. We don't have to stick to his case alone, but obviously that's why we're talking about it right now. And most recently, the discussion has shifted to the issue of vetting. Vetting in this case meant, you know, a three-person committee created through the NDP structure that evaluated the candidates, and they recently blocked Eve. We'll link the rejection letter because we might refer to it and the points that they made or didn't make so you can see for yourself. But it's brought up a discussion about vetting. And, you know, it didn't start with the blocking. I think most of us anticipated that we would get to this point. Yes?
I certainly did.
That we would be talking about it. I mean, I am never going to support vetting in the way that it's framed right now. I think folks might be surprised about your position, though. Desmond, like, how do you feel about Eve getting blocked? Let's start there.
Obviously, it wasn't much of a surprise to me. I think that the way that the party has chosen to disqualify Eve Engler is disgraceful. It feels very cowardly because it feels like what they did mainly was take a bunch of political issues that people, quite frankly, within the NDP may or may not agree on. Like, there's variation within the party about how people feel about a lot of political issues, but they've kind of framed those political issues as though it's like, to be part of this party, you have to believe these things politically or you're disqualified. And I think that that's an abuse of a vetting process. So when it comes to saying that Eve Engler has said certain things about Russia, or he has said certain positions about Assad and Syria. By the way, the evidence that they provided for these claims was incredibly weak, I would say, in most cases. But I don't actually think, I don't think that that's really enough. I think that those kinds of things, like, they, it feels like they threw a whole bunch of stuff at the wall to see what would stick, hoping that people would take one or the other of their points of, like, this is why we don't want you running for leadership, and be like, oh, I agree with that. So good. It's fair.
Or a little bit with everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that there's, like, a really, really big problem with that. I would say at the same time, though, Jessa, that I've noticed that what a lot of people who have been critical of me have been disappointed in me for is that they want me to come out and say outright that Eve should be included in the race, that I should be advocating for his inclusion, particularly because I myself have faced, you know, unfair scrutiny and abuses from institutions before. So I should be sympathetic to what he's going through. So first of all, I believe that a party has the right to have some kind of vetting process. And I kind of actually think that it's necessary. I cannot imagine a political party where someone's trying to run for political power on an ideology where there's no vetting, where there are no parameters for you being allowed to run. I don't think that makes any sense to me. And from what I talk about with most people, I think most people are like, there has to be some lines. We probably all have different ideas of where the line should be, but there have to be some, in my opinion. It's up to the NDP to set those lines. Now, many people have said, but it's not democratic. It's this shadowy three-person vetting committee. We don't even know who they are. That's true. But what I have observed watching Eve Engler try to apply is that people are comfortable with there being one set of vetting rules for everybody else and then a different set for him. He has, even now that he's been rejected, gone as far as saying the other candidates should suspend their campaigns, even though they've already been vetted, until, well, he doesn't say until what. He kind of just says until democracy is served, which I think suggests until he's allowed into the race. And he's appealing his rejection to the federal council. By the way, you can appeal your rejection. He appealed his rejection. They gave him a one-line reaffirmation, no, you're not in. So now the only recourse he has, I guess, is the federal council of the NDP reversing all of these decisions.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know that a three-person vetting committee deciding these things is democratic. I also, though, don't think it's democratic to have five people go into the race, get in on one vetting process, and then to let a different person in on a completely different vetting process, which is essentially what Eve Engler is asking for now.
Okay.
I don't think that's right. And as last thing, okay. I don't think it's right that if you want to change the vetting process of the NDP, that you should be doing that in the middle of a leadership race. If the membership wants to have control over what the vetting looks like in the future, I think that's absolutely correct. You cannot change that in the middle of a race that some people have already completed and gone through.
Okay, you give me a lot to unpack there. Let's shelve the vetting is necessary, because that's a separate conversation. We're going to have it, but I'm not just going to wax off on you on that. We'll go back and forth on that, because I think that that'll be a very interesting conversation. But I think the first thing I'm going to just challenge, because it's the first thing I see in my notes, is this idea that him asking to suspend, I hadn't even heard this, but just...
Yeah, it came out on the weekend, I think.
Yeah. Asking them to suspend in protest, I don't think is necessarily asking them to follow different rules, because I don't, for two reasons. One, they've suspended each other's campaigns before in solidarity so they can reach milestones. So it's like not that far of a stretch that he's asking them to just like throw the campaign in the air and somehow take risks. I mean, they should. They did it for each other, but I'm surprised he's appealing to them. I don't think they'll do it. But two, we know that there are different rules applied already by this committee and HQ because of our experience. We know that being outspoken on some issues is okay and others is not. Some behaviors are okay. So the way that they apply their harassment criteria will vary person to person. So there is no actual objectivity in the vetting process. So to assume that there was actually check marks and criteria like weight, height, things that can be measured, it's not. It's always arbitrary, and it's always been used to just weed out people from power, not from membership, not from paying dues, right? This is a process that's only once applied when you want to seek any kind of power, and then it's completely administered by those already in power. So asking them to suspend their campaigns when some of them have been a little bit critical of I mean, some of them should be reformists, or I don't know what folks are doing out there. And so at what point do we talk about it? Right. That brings me to your next point about like the timing in the middle of the campaign. When do we talk about it? Because they don't let you talk it about council. That is a set agenda. We've tried. Folks have tried on EDA level by resigning en masse because of the vetting process, and they just replace everybody. We've tried at executive, like by trying to win at convention. We've tried by folks put resolutions in. There's been petitions signed. There's been all kinds of avenues tried, but nobody's actually ever run for president on a platform that includes reforms that are otherwise not ever talked about. So timing, again, is kind of drifting into the discussion of whether their tactics are valid or not. And it's like, well, when this party has rejected almost every valid avenue of protest, folks are going to then should be prepared and ready to support people who are then going outside or walking a gray line on these rules, regulations, and norms, because all the other avenues tried have failed so far. Right. And hurt people, right, when they try to follow all the rules and still they end up banging their head against the wall. So I think that that's a little bit unfair, but appealing to federal counsel, these are the same people that kind of formed the committee. I don't see that as an avenue. It's just another one of those kind of dead end streets for people who are trying to reform the party. So I'd like to also talk, like, feel free to obviously address anything I've just said there, but and then move on to the discussion of vetting and whether we do need it or not.
Okay, so first of all, I guess the question is, when you decide that you're going to apply to be part of a process, do you accept the result of the process? Like, we can argue that a process is fair or unfair, but it feels to me like this whole campaign of Englers has been like, I won't accept the result if it's not what I want. Eve Engler said at the beginning of running for office, and he said many times throughout the campaign, I know because I've followed many things that he has put out, interviews that he's done, all of his Facebook and social media posts. He said before the rejection that he was just going to go on as if it didn't mean anything if they rejected him. So is this in good faith? Like, are you going to accept the decision of the body that you submitted yourself to? Because that's the part of this to me that seems so weird, is that it's like, I'm asking you to make a decision, but also you don't have the right to make the decision. So it's very confounding. And as for, like, you know, the federal council thing and appealing to the federal council and then asking other people to suspend their campaigns, well, if we all know it's futile and it's not going to go anywhere, I agree. Like, I remember Tony McPhail suspended the fundraising for his campaign so that he could help Tennille Johnston fundraise as well, so that they could both get across a fundraising threshold. That was a beautiful moment, actually. It's one of the actually like nice things that has happened in this race, where two people were supporting one another, right? But no, he's asking people not to suspend fundraising, but to suspend their entire campaign for something that it feels like none of us believe is actually going to happen. And when I say different rules or in the middle of the race, what I'm saying is essentially what I feel like Eve Engler has told us all is, if I get accepted by this corrupt, evil, immoral party and its vetting committee, then it's fine. It's actually fine that they're all those things if I get accepted. If I don't get accepted, then it's not okay that they're immoral and corrupt and unfair, and we have to do something about it. I am sympathetic to what you're saying about how people have tried so many different things within this party to try and get it to change. And it is for that exact reason, Jessa, that I am so ambivalent about the NDP, its organizing and its fortunes and its future. This is why I kind of divest myself from getting too into the middle of that, because you can start another political party. You can decide to try and engage yourself in politics in different ways than capital P electoral politics. But to go into an institution that has a set of norms and to say, we're going to actually just like, we're going to delegitimize everything that this party does, but then also say we should be at the head of it. I don't think that reads to most people. I don't think most people understand how you can hold those two positions at the same time that feel like you want to take the party down, but then also that it would be good for you to be at the head of it. One last thing. Like, this party has members. We keep talking about democracy and about members. The party has members. They should be the ones to decide what happens with vetting. And yes, I am critical of the idea that it actually should be led by a candidate who has an interest in the middle of the process because he's in it. I don't think that's really, like, weird or controversial to say. So,
but the members don't have a say. They can't shape it. That's been the problem and one of the major gripes with the campaign from the beginning, right? Like, because they were honest, going like, they're not going to vet us, or they're going to try to block us. And this is why we're holding on and submitting our papers, because we are anticipating this. And so I don't think it's fair to say that he would say this is fine if he had been accepted, because it is in their platform reforms on the vetting process completely, as well.
But he wanted to be accepted under the current process that he says is completely unfair.
We do this all the time, right? Like, and in terms of, like, coming up as insurgent campaigns, we often encourage them. I mean, if you were looking at a union like La Una, right? Real pieces of shit and traitors to the movement. If there was a campaign there from a member in good standing that was just like, this is a corrupt institution. The bosses at the top are in it with the developers. They are selling out our comrades across all movements, and we are going to come up and we are going to reshape this. You're not even going to recognize this place. We'd be standing back and applauding them. We'd be like, that is awesome. Someone's finally going to take over that institution and fix it up. And, you know, we wouldn't be so critical on, like, because they're speaking really, really badly of the system. Or we wouldn't say, well, just leave and find a new union, create a new union. Because that's not an option for a lot of people. Like, I don't want to take over the party. I think it's a lost cause. I think you should just start building your mailing list from scratch if that's what you're afraid of, or what people want out of the NDP. Reform is a huge fucking task. But if people want to run up in a campaign that appears like a burn it down campaign, I'm not going to be the one to criticize them, because I did the same thing, right? Like, I ran as president with no intention of winning, really, because nobody knew me, and I knew the establishment would put up everything against me, but that was my main gripe. And it was like, well, I don't care what they do to me. I don't care if this looks badly on the party. This needs to be aired. Like, people need to know how they're treating our activist friends, how they're treating smaller riding associations. There was a list of gripes, but that was the only reason I wanted to get in there, was to raise this issue, because, you know, other than the 30 seconds to 3 minutes you might get on the mic if you jump in on time at the right mic, and that resolution happens to be up, so that's the subject you get to talk about. If you wanted to talk about party reforms, good luck. Good luck. That there was no space for that. So one of the biggest platforms then we thought of was like a presidential campaign with a whole slate, and we were all going to talk about it. And then finally, at least people in convention, which is pretty closed doors, would hear it. And it did nothing. I mean, we got 30% of the vote, so there was clearly an appetite for it, but it yielded absolutely nothing except, you know, they came after me and some of my friends, and they burned out a lot of people who tried really, really hard to reform it. But my point is, you know, it was completely an insurgent campaign, and the loyalists, yeah, they hated me for it, you know, because I was airing dirty laundry publicly. And that's like publicly, like, I didn't have a big platform, and it was convention. Who's watching CPAC? Like, except some of us,
some of us nerds. Yeah.
But, you know, now this is a very public stage, the most public space that the NDP will ever afford a member to speak, period. Period. If you have something that you would like the world to know about the NDP, or at least for everyone who follows the NDP to finally hear you or hear this message, like imperialism, a real take on Gaza. Like, they are so... We know what that means, I think, here. And issues within the party. Real issues. Not this vague, oh, we got to center more voices. We have to sit more people at the table. Like, real structural problems with the party. And they figured this was the only way to get it aired. You know, win, lose, it didn't matter. Yes, they took a stage. To me, it was a stunt. I think some people probably thought it of a serious campaign. I didn't, and I apologize if that hurt some comrades to hear that, but I never viewed it that way. I thought of it always as a protest kind of stunt. Picture people walking into the Giller with a ticket. They followed all the rules. They signed the terms and conditions. Yeah. I'm here, but I am actually here to disrupt the fuck out of it. I want you to talk about Gaza. Right? So, like that.
I agree that it was a stunt, and I also have received a lot of criticism for just being honest about that. Because I think it's my job to just call it as I see it there. But I think just to wrap this idea up, what I would say is, ultimately, the membership have to be the ones raising their voices along with the person who's doing the insurgency thing. Emily Lowen got thousands of members not just to sign up, but to raise their voices along with her in British Columbia. And now she's the leader of the BC Green Party. So to the extent that what Eve is doing, and by the way, when you talk about getting on the stage, he's not on the stage. He wanted to be in the debates. He wanted to be included so that he could do those things. And he's not there. And so he doesn't have access to the big stage that he wanted to be able to say these things. And ultimately, to me, even if it's a leadership campaign, I don't like the assumption that people are fine with something just because they don't speak up. I think it's always hard to kind of, we can't attribute something to people when they're not saying anything. But because of that, I can't assume that most members of the NDP hate this vetting process and want to get rid of it. The only way that we can know that is if through Eve Angler doing this kind of a campaign, thousands of them rise up and say, finally, a candidate who's speaking to this unfair vetting process, we're with him. I didn't see that, Jessa. And I think that's the reason why, if things don't change after this, that they won't change. Because I don't see how he engaged the actual membership that exists now to be like, you guys are with me, this is a problem, let's all rise up together. It's been him and a very loyal group of his supporters, many of whom are not part of the party, who were waiting to see whether he'd get in to sign up, or who said, if he doesn't get in, I am quitting this party. And I think that this is the weakness of the strategy, is that that push can't just come from a charismatic leading figure. It's got to come from a very, very broad portion of the grassroots to get the party's attention.
But it did at a time, right? At one point in the Ontario NDP, we had the signatures and support of dozens of ridings. And I mean, in Ontario, if you know, a lot of those ridings are actually just completely controlled by HQ, right? There's not even anybody there working. And so to get a large number of ridings was pretty big. And we did make a lot of noise as a collective. We didn't have a shiny figure. Like, literally no one knew who I was. And I wasn't leading the pack. That was just during convention. We pressed on every avenue. And we weren't the first, you know? And The fact that the NDP or that these insurgent campaigns are somehow like destructive, you're kind of closing off a bit of the umbrella, right? It's not just like this handful of people. There are a lot of people who feel politically homeless because not just the vetting, but this vetting has been a tool to punish socialists and pro-Palestinian activists for the large part, or people who are outspoken critics of the party. So it's not just like, oh, we need all these members to speak up against vetting. Some of these members are actually, frankly, quite clueless when it comes to how the party actually operates. It surprises me when I get engaged in conversations and how naive people are like, well, just bring a resolution to convention. And it's like, you have no idea the structures that are built up against folks to suppress the idea of kind of reform. But I agree with you fully that blocking of Eve should be enough to have people rise up. But we've seen them before. We've seen them just kind of when you're facing political homelessness, you will let a lot of stuff slide in-house. And you will find yourself defending, not you, Desmond, right? Defending stuff that you normally wouldn't. Partisans will do this, right? And I'm going to use an example, and I am going to name Sid Ryan because he's not just, I don't feel like I'm punching down. And before Eve was blocked, he wrote a big, long piece on vetting, defending vetting as a concept. The commies do it, so why can't we?
I saw that, yeah.
I couldn't really understand it then, and I challenged him on it and was vilified by the usual suspects, waffle party kids, you know, got gripes with the Lewis camp, and those are valid gripes, but we'll get to those perhaps, maybe we won't. But, you know, then the second Eve is blocked, we see a statement by him. Oh, well, this isn't right. Well, I mean, maybe Eve didn't reach enough people. Maybe he didn't pass vetting because so many people spent a considerable amount of energy shitting on his campaign and questioning him, and not like McPherson, like who's attended the Trilateral Commission of like the most evil capitalists you can imagine. Or, you know, the other candidates, it's all kumbaya, which is great. I love these warm feelings, but like you need massive reform in that party, apparently, right? That's what members are saying. They may not say they don't like vetting, but they know that party is like dumped, right? It needs something, anything. They can all agree on that. And it's starting by opening that umbrella to the left, not just to the right. And this is just another time of them saying, no, I'd rather burn it down. Like New Brunswick, you know, the Waffle Party won there and they won the leadership and a lot of the apparatus. And they're like, guess what? We'll decertify you. And they did. Mm-hmm. And then socialists won again in New Brunswick. And Chris Thompson, the interim leader there, he faced similar rhetoric or threats, rather, from head office going, no, you're not going to be no socialist party. We will delist you. So Emily Lowen might have done something great, and I want the best for these campaigns, but we don't know what kind of compromises she's going to have to make with the Green Party to be revolutionary, if that's their goal. You know, they will have to walk a lot of lines to simply continue to exist. It's not as easy as that, and I think people liked the fact that Eve pushed the boundaries, right? That's what appealed to me.
A lot of people clearly liked it, and the point of a stunt campaign is to get people's attention. So I feel like it's a little rich to do weird, unconventional things to get attention and then be like, why is everyone paying so much attention to me? Like you're trying to do things unconventionally for the purpose of that. So like calling yourself an NDP candidate when you haven't even applied to be an NDP candidate. This was the first thing that I called out that people got upset at. No, the NDP vetting committee is not being like, well, we are going to fairly evaluate Eve Engler's application, but first let's see what Desmond has to say about it. Like, yeah, if you're going to be calling yourself a candidate, you should at least apply to be a candidate. You should say, I'm a prospective NDP candidate because I haven't actually taken the time to apply yet. These things aren't like, the rules are shit, but I'm going to submit myself to the rules and then I'm going to complain that the rules are shit. Like there has to be some kind of union somewhere. And obviously not enough people within this party are taking, like I have to assume without any other knowledge that most people in the party are either not paying attention, like you said, don't have the info about what the vetting process is like, or that they support it. That is his major obstacle. That was his major obstacle coming into it. And I think you and I agree. It continues to be the obstacle now. But maybe we could talk about vetting more broadly.
Yeah. And to lead into vetting, that that language that we're talking about, that perspective, people might not understand why that's important. So the party, when you tell them you're interested, you get sent a nomination package with a warning that also says, like, do not tell anybody that you're applying for this. Don't announce anything until you've completed the vetting. But one of the major reasons for that is to hide the vetting process. it's to shame people, because once you get denied, most people, we don't hear about it. I will get DMs. I've got a long list of people, I would never air it, that have been blocked and just don't want anyone to know. It's embarrassing. Your own party blocked you. And you're still paying dues. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to tell anybody either. So they don't want you announcing, because then they have to explain why they blocked you. So someone who's not going to prescribe to that is, again, trying to challenge that system head on that has been a problem for people. And I don't think you need vetting. I understand, like, Vancouver Tenants Union. And I'm sorry if it's not a hard line for them, but I'm okay with people creating a basis of unity. Like, I understand organizing in spaces where you want to make sure it's a productive space, it's a safe space, it's free from folks that will be a problem. And as a group, you can kind of find common values and list them, right? Tenants you must prescribe to. We saw this with the encampments. You know, if you were going to enter the encampments, you had to, you know, believe that in the right to Palestinian resistance, there's a list. And this is not unusual nor unfair. But that is to enter the space. That's to protect the whole space and grow meaningfully. But the NDP will take your money. They'll take your time. They'll take all of that energy, but only apply vetting to restrict your access to power. And so if you want to create a basis of unity, it should be for people who want to participate, not as a strictly gatekeeping mechanism, which is, you know, what they have now. I was trying to find good examples, right? Like, folks where we can be like, right? And it was like, I could find one. It was, and I can't even remember his name, Paul Miller.
Right.
In Ontario. He was an MPP at the time. And they were like, you're not running again. There was allegations of misconduct in his office. And they were just like, there's no way you're running again. And people had been demanding that for some time. And so I'm not sure what happened around that totally. So I'm like, maybe, like, because, like, you know, but still, I think you bring this membership together, you should trust them enough to kind of make these decisions and of who is electable, who is not electable, who has a valid campaign, who doesn't. I mean, if it's not a legitimate campaign, then it's going to crash and burn.
Yeah. A lot of things can happen along the way as it crashes and burns, and other people can be harmed in the process while it crashes and burns. If we know that somebody in our community, for example, has been abusive to people, and I'm not talking about this in a legal context. One of the interesting things that they did I know all parties do this. They'll ask you things like, have you ever been arrested before as part of a vetting process, right? I think in this one, they said, have you been kicked out of university? And it just so happens that Eve Engler was for his actions in Concordia in, I believe, 2000. So parties ask all kinds of things of people because they don't want to, in their eyes, be embarrassed later if things that they didn't know about somebody come out while they're now representing the party. So forget about the law and like a criminal conviction, but let's just say we know someone in our community has been abusing other people. Should there be no process to say you're not allowed to represent this party? If we know that somebody is racist, should there be no provision whatsoever, sexist, homophobic, transphobic? There should be no barrier to them getting up on a stage next to people who abhor those values, who are fighting against those values. We're going to give a platform to somebody who believes those things and wants to spew them in the name of not having a vetting process because let the membership decide. I can see why people would have a huge problem with that.
But why would you allow this person to access every other part of that community, right? So that means they are in an EDA. That means they are working on campaigns. That means they're attending a convention. And so if...
Because the party is a hierarchy by its nature. Because the party is a hierarchy that has a leadership, that has an executive, and that's the way that it's structured. So people might not think that Jim from Etobicoke, who's transphobic, represents the NDP, and they might be able to disavow him if he says transphobic things. They can't disavow a leadership candidate who says those things, though. That's the reason, because it's a hierarchy, and it's fair to assume that people who hold higher positions within the party or are seeking them are representing the party as a whole. That would be my answer.
Sure, but that's not what's happening whatsoever either, right? Like, so we've just allowed, I think we're just bypassing the fact that we're just going to let anybody into the party, but only filter out their harmful behavior should they try to run for leader or maybe be an MP or something like that. And I think, like, that's my point. And I started off by saying a basis of unity is fine. I mean, it's easier to form with a smaller group, but the problem is the NDP is also a marketing campaign and their concern isn't values-based. It's money. It's drawing in as many members as possible, being the broadest umbrella possible without bringing in any radicals, because they think that siphons off of their funds that they could receive from liberals and other maybe non-decided voters. So we've never seen the vetting process really kind of pan out that way. It's repeatedly been weaponized against dissenters and mostly pro-Palestinian activists within the party. They don't just do it at vetting. They do try to filter out people that they see as problems. And they do it in the same way, you know, with this really broad anti-harassment document. And it's all applied very arbitrarily. And over and over and over again, this mechanism has proven to use it in this way, right? To isolate folks. And so I felt like a lot of people who are taking this position are helping that. They're helping with that isolation and validating that, because the people, especially when you're talking about Eves's campaign, I mean, some of them might believe in centralization because there's a lot of Marxists there and whatnot, but a lot of the grassroots do take a real issue with the fact that this progressive institution operates as such a hierarchy, right? So you're going to see people go in there and try to challenge that in different ways, right? That might be abrasive. It's not to not question people and to not hold their feet to the fire. I understand, especially from your perspective as a journalist that challenges people in power, going for power. But yeah, because I view this from the perspective of an activist campaign, I would like if people treated it more as such. And maybe there's a fine line that we can draw there, but I mean...
Sorry, I just...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
What? It was kind of an allusion that you said to, like, letting people do things. I'm not stopping anyone from doing anything. I have opinions. By the way, there are people within the party that have the same opinions about some of these things that I do. I think people resent me because I have built a very large platform over the years. And so it's more important when I say things that they don't agree with. But, like, I'm not preventing people from making these arguments. I'm not even in the party. The party... Imagine the NDP caring what I say when I've been pushing back against the NDP on things like racial profiling for 15 years and criticizing them for their absolute failures to confront police power. They don't care what I say, but it's like this thing that gets attributed where it's like, well, you're speaking loudly, so now you're helping them. I don't draw that conclusion. I'm not going to remain silent given that I have opinions on all kinds of things and people are free to agree or disagree with those things. People can make these arguments. They have to make them within a party that is incredibly at this time resistant to their offerings and to their efforts. And that's a really hard climb. You know, I think that saying that those of us who believe in activism and who believe in insurgency, if we're not going to outright help these things, should at least sit back and let them happen. We're all political people here. We all have ideas. We all have opinions about how things are meant to be done. If somebody offers a better opinion than mine and is able to convince more people within the party that it's correct, I mean, I'm not speaking to the party. I'm speaking to the breach audience, or I'm speaking to my audience on social media. I actually don't want to convert anybody in the NDP to any particular idea. I want my ideas to be out there and to be thought about by a wide range of people. But I'm certainly not preventing Eve Engler or anyone else from doing or saying anything by having an opinion. And it has bothered me throughout all of this that sometimes that's the interpretation. But you know what? I'm a big boy, Jess. I've been doing this for a long time. I have to accept people's criticism, which is why I wanted to come on with you. And I just want to point out to people that Eve Angler was presenting himself in this race to potentially run for Prime Minister of Canada. So I think he can probably handle criticisms as well. And he has to, as somebody who's been going up to politicians for many years, holding their feet to the fire. When you want to jump into politics as well, you have to accept that people are going to do the same thing to you. And the criticisms should be fair, but they're going to come.
I don't think a lot of the criticisms he faced were fair. And like the reminder that we kind of put up at the top of the show, where when we're arguing about positions, sometimes they're not your positions, but they certainly were widely circulated positions that, you know, it was illegitimate. And in fact, you know, you're kind of, you're arguing like for the legitimacy of vetting, right? Which does then silence a huge chunk of the members.
I just believe in some kind of vetting. And until someone shows me that the NDP membership writ large does not, I have to assume that they also believe in some kind of vetting. I'm not here to prescribe exactly what that should look like, but I would never want to be part of a political organization that didn't have any. And I'm going to guess that most people feel the same way, but I'm happy to be proven wrong about that.
Maybe we can poll folks. I'm not sure. But yeah, no, it's a discussion that members should be exploring amongst themselves when they see it lead to this over and over again. But I do want to hit on, and it's part of, you know, the structured talk that we were going to have about how folks interact with this discussion and, you know, talking about criticizing or not criticizing. And I think when we look at it from our two different perspectives there, I understand where we don't come to an agreement, but I am not saying that his campaign or anybody else's campaign should be without criticism. I think they should be fair. A lot of them have not been fair. Like talking about, we still haven't even passed the deadline to put in your papers for nomination, right? And so there were so many people that said, oh yeah, well then put your papers in. And it was all a matter of not agreeing with his strategy, but being so openly hostile about going another way, doing it a different way, using more strategic language to be more effective. Like these are all kind of tactical decisions that like you... In my position where we interview activists all the time, we talk about how it's a myriad of tactics that will eventually take us where we need to go. Yes. We don't know which ones are going to work even as we're executing them, and they seem like they'll be successful, or sometimes failures make ripple effects that then down the road lead to where we need to go. And we just, it's such a crapshoot. And just like armchair quarterbacks, you know, we can, it's not very helpful to while someone's in the middle of a campaign or a push against power, because Eve Angler was just as much trying to get power, which is like the leader, a seatless leader of a 7-seat party at the moment with no resources, but it was more a challenge to power, right? He was challenging HQ. He was challenging imperialism and making that like the be all end all. So for a protest campaign to be, it's this tricky line, like, are you punching up or are you punching down? Because he's not actually in power. No one will let him even near the race to be power, because he is talking about the powerful in that way, right? Largely, that's really what kept him out. And so that's, to me, how we look at each other and we call each other. Maybe we form circles. Maybe we send messages. Maybe we do have discussions and critiques, but we usually do postmortems after a campaign. You know, like if you were in the NDP, it's not, you know, it's almost law that while the campaign is running during an election, you don't say squat negative about your party, right? Like they cop to that during a partisanship to protect their own. But that's not why we do it in activism. We do it because we can't like disown the most radical elements among us, right? And
yeah, can I ask a practical question about how I saw this playing out?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I saw Eve Angler being criticized for in terms of just apply was that a lot of people thought he would have been excellent in debates. And we saw an atrocious NDP debate happen in the last few weeks, where it was in Montreal. It was supposed to be a mainly French-speaking debate. The candidates could not speak French. It was very, very embarrassing seeing people up there in Quebec saying, I think learning your language is really important. I just haven't done it yet. It was awful.
And starting there.
Like, right. Kind of. You know, and so like a lot of people wanted Eve Engler in this race so that he could participate in debates. So Jessa, what do you make then of people saying when Eve Engler says, I'm being kept out of these debates? Remember my criticism about earlier, saying and acting like you're on the same level as the other candidates in terms of your status when you're not. Is it right for Eve Engler to not apply, to know that it's going to take time when he does apply to be vetted, and then while he's being vetted be like, I can't believe they didn't let me into this debate that is for candidates? What do you make of that?
You're being so generous to HQ. Okay, they knew he was going to apply. He didn't put in his papers, but don't tell me they weren't scouring every inch of his social media to make sure they were ready to block him. And then they released that paper that was like diddly squat. I could have put that together in 5 minutes. But they told him the second they got his papers that they would not have it done in time and that they would take even longer. They managed to get 5 candidates with extensive organizing records themselves. Tony's been around a long time running this, that, the other thing, advocating for Green Party, right? Talking about running the Green Party together. They don't take issue with that, but they vet all those 5 people, no problem. Then they got one guy.
It did take them weeks to do the other candidates, though, too. You know that,
yeah,
right?
Like 2 weeks.
Not 2 weeks. That's not correct.
they have bylaws that they're supposed to be following in terms of the length of time they take with vetting.
It says after 4 weeks, I read the rules, it says after 4 weeks you can send them a letter. So they give themselves in the rules 4 weeks to do
it. Right. So my point is, though, they knew Eve was going to vet, right? They knew Eve was going to submit papers, and they already told him when he submitted it, you're not going to have it in time for the debate. So, yes, I think those folks miscalculated how scrupulous or unscrupulous, rather, the vetting committee would be. That they would deploy absolutely every bit of bureaucracy against them. And they did, right? To the party's detriment in the end. But they waited too late. But like, why is nobody asking instead, why do you take so long vetting people, right? When what are you? It's a questionnaire. Because they take such deep dives. They're like the U.S. Customs. They are going through your social media for years. Like, why aren't we asking then? Why is that? Why are you doing this? Does it take so long? Yeah. Hold on, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Please.
Go ahead.
Right. So, and also, why aren't we asking why they're holding such critical leadership events with a due date of submitting your nomination 2 months later? So it's like sometime in January, folks have until, like, we could still get another candidate. I don't know. And, but we're having, like, who planned this? That we'll go all the way to March, but we're November, 2 months before we cut people off, we're going to start holding the leadership debates. We're going to start completely platforming these 5 candidates and just go with it. Like, as though it's fully in check. And we haven't passed that nomination date. No other race works that way. When you're in an EDA and there's a nomination for a candidate, once we don't start running campaigns properly until the nomination's been set, right? But this was unusual. So unusual. I wonder if maybe they heard Eve was going to hold on to his nom papers and they just started platforming these 5 people as fast as possible. But nobody's asking that, and that is a theme for me. That's why it feels like punching down, because we're asking so many questions about Eve's campaign. When did he know he was rejected? When did he tell you? When did he put his papers in? How long did they take? Like, why are you saying this? Why are you approaching it that way? But, like, nobody's asking why Avi Lewis is timing his campaign in the way that he has. I mean, I raised a lot of concerns, but I don't see anybody else doing it. I don't see anybody questioning HQ's timing. I don't see anybody questioning why Heather McPherson is oddly silent or platforming Zionists. I saw Eve asking, but why she's platforming Zionists during her campaign while wearing a watermelon pin. And so it felt so, not just you, so again, I'm not talking about Desmond, but this is the experience, like on Facebook, on social media, there was just an overwhelming bad focus on Eve's campaign. Like, just it felt hypercritical at a time where we could have been hypercritical of the party, because we don't ever really get to do that. And then that's what really puzzled me about your response there that one day, where you're just like, I don't feel the need to always, you know, go at the broad critique of the party. Sometimes, you know, there's an individual issue we want to talk about. But I was like, but today of all days, when they used the vetting to block another one of us, was kind of like, felt again, like punching down. Like, why aren't we now enraged at this rejection that you admit is bullshit, right? Like, at least the points that they've provided are weak. Like that, I felt if there was a time for us to focus our energy, it was to punch up together there.
Right. So I want to ask about punching down or punching at all, because I don't think criticism is punching. That's the okay. first thing. It's fair. Criticism. We all receive it. I've received it. I don't feel like I'm being punched. But how am I punching beneath myself? This is a person who's written 13 books, who is known internationally for his work. This is a person who's seeking a federal political party office, who raised over $100,000 in a few weeks, who's been written in the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star and the National Post. If I tweet some things saying, I don't really understand this, or I think that that is problematic, how am I punching down on that candidate?
Well, I mean, if you don't think any criticism is punching, it would be hard for me to like convince you or make an argument to that. But and I think even my language is problematic there, because it made you feel as though I meant punching down from you, which is not accurate. So let me perhaps reframe that with different language. Maybe I might end up using punching, but rather it was an option. I felt like you had options in a few circumstances that I just kind of talked about, so I won't go over it, but where you could have punched up, and I felt you punched to the insurgent campaign. So from my perspective, like, we've got bosses, and then you've got people coming in and going after them. And in a moment where they had suffered a blow, we were asking about the timing of something to do with that campaign that had just suffered a blow versus punching up to HQ. So, and there were a couple circumstances that's when I used that reference with you. But I mean, the whole campaign was not void of like those kinds of circumstances where, and rather than asking and spending the time to talk about these fundamental problems, it was, he's like an egomaniac. It felt like a lot of times it went just like personal dislikes of Eve and a condemnation of tactics that we would celebrate in other grassroots campaigns that are, you know, have different targets than the NDP. But a lot of people protect the NDP, not you. Not Desmond. He's on the record. He is critical. He eyes wide open. I'm not teaching him anything here. But, you know, there are people that still buy into a lot of this. And I thought this was an opportunity for anyone to capitalize on this, to expose it, not to just reel people back in, because I'm just going to take a second here to help people understand also why it's so personal. And I hinted at it at the beginning. It's just, they came after me in the same way, like a secret committee. I believe it had 3 people on it. Okay. It was headed by the same woman, Lucy Watson. Mm. And they used the same criteria. And the mechanisms that they afforded me to fight it back were like in secret. So I couldn't do it publicly. I couldn't rally a legitimate defense without breaking the rules of the party. And so I said, fuck you. And I aired the letter that they sent me, and I was like, I'm done with this, whatever. And I was vilified. I was vilified. And rather than, and folks like Avi, rather than coming to my defense, like hardly anybody did. Mind you, I didn't want to fight for my membership, but like there was, it was almost like when JAMA, there was like this little bit of outrage and then nobody really did anything. Everyone went back. It's like watching someone go back to your abuser and be like, come on, everybody, not this time. Don't worry. They only did it to one or two or a dozen or 100 of us. Right. And so it's always the dissenters that are isolated, and HQ does this, right? And so when people start repeating HQ's phrasing and, you know, like you said, like buying in a little bit to every little bit of that rejection letter, right? Like finding a little bit of sunlight. Well, I can see why they would have to vet him out, or I can see why it's necessary. And it's just like, it's making a lot of excuses for a lot of badness. And so like that insurgent campaign that like we launched ages ago now, and the waffles, like my dad, you know, they were just vilified, not just by HQ, but by party regulars who all of a sudden hated shit disturbers. They pretend to be them. But you got Sid Ryan online going like, how can you associate your campaign with NDP haters? He's talking about people who have been... He is talking about people who have been marginalized by that same process. Dismissing all those experiences and going, well, I can see some merit in it. we should challenge that at a better time. And there's all of us, like so many of us going like, no, fuck that. Burn it down. Show them for what it's worth. You know, I don't think that was the position of the campaign. Like, I think there was a mix of people in that campaign that were like, let's go in. If it blows up during this campaign, I mean, it's no sweat off my back. But I think a large part of the Socialist Caucus would feel like I'm misrepresenting them by saying, like, I think they think they can still go in, make some reforms, and make it a vehicle for anti-imperialism and some other more socialist reforms or whatnot. But there's just a lot of us that are just like... Yeah, that campaign, let it go. Let it piss a whole lot of people off. But at the end, will we finally just see what this party is like? So you folks can just stop spending your energy there. Stop vilifying people that are pointing out this discretions. Because, like, to be honest, I don't think I'll include this, Desmond. But, like, when you said I don't always feel the need to critique the broader party, that kind of felt like a dig at me. And I'm super sensitive. I've got rejection sensitivity. So like, I just want to explain like why I probably came off as very defensive after that. Because I was like, yeah, I take a dig at that party every chance I can get because they've hurt me and my friends and the movements. And I know you know that, so I'm not talking to you like you don't know that. But, you know, like, that's why I was just like, I don't care if you're sick of it. Because sometimes I feel like I'm the only person out there. And comrades, I know I'm not alone. I see you. But it feels like that where comrades, like my Marxists or other socialists or NTP longtime friends were just like, turn into whole new people during this leadership race, or in times of heated partisan needs. And I felt Eve was on the receiving end of that. And that's when I got involved in the campaign, not his campaign, but just opining on it. I swore I wouldn't talk about it. Sorry.
Not at all. What I said about not feeling the need every time I talk about the campaign to criticize the broader party, that was the sum of what it felt like a lot of people were telling me, is that like, you're focusing here, you should be looking over here and focusing. So I didn't want that to be a personal attack against you. And I'm sorry, I should have been more sensitive in the way that I said that. So I apologize.
Fucking Twitter.
Yeah. That's why I'd rather do this. See, because we can actually just hash things out and be better understood. But like at the end of it, I think a little bit wary of we've just got to throw everything we have at them. And I don't consider myself part of that we, because I'm not trying to make the NDP better. That's not my job. Like my job is to...
You're arguing from a devil's advocate position a lot of the times here, right? You're like, if I were, then this is what I do.
Well, it's like holding people to account is a different thing than trying to improve them and their institution, right? So I follow the NDP. The NDP wants to have political power and influence in this party. Sometimes they do and say things that are good. A lot of the time they don't. But for me to be like, this is what the internal structure of the party should look like. This is what vetting should look like. This is how you should or shouldn't have rejected a candidate. That's too inside of the party for me. I am not willing or interested with my own energy and time to go there. I think all the time about Sarah Gemma and how the Ontario NDP dismissed her from their caucus. And I remember very well how many people immediately were demanding, let her back into the party, let her back into the party. And I was like, nope, I don't think that that's a good idea, because I was watching my friend go through hell after being kicked out. And all the people who were just saying, let her back in, I don't know that they were considering what that had done to her emotionally and spiritually, and how we would expect people who just treated her like that, who just watched while Marit Stiles was so racist and Islamophobic towards Sarah, saying that Sarah had caused other people's unsafety by being a Black Muslim woman who was talking about Palestine. Like, what had she done? But Marit Stiles felt comfortable going out and saying those things about Sarah. And so I'm looking at people being like, how could you want her to willingly go back into an environment where people had just treated her like that? And that is kind of how I feel about all of this stuff at large. I'm not going to spend my energy telling people you have to exert this force against the NDP so that they can be this or that. They have shown very clearly who and what they want to be. That's their choice. I cover them and I move on. Other people are free to do it their way. I might have thoughts about it from time to time. That's part of political discourse to me. But it's hard to keep trying to run up against something that doesn't want your voice, that doesn't want your inclusion. Number of people have told me about the Star and the Star kicking me out, as if it's somehow analogous to the NDP not letting Eve run. Well, I didn't try to get back into the Star when they kicked me out. I got the message and I said, it's time for me to go somewhere else and use my precious time and energy to do something that I personally feel is constructive. And I only want that for other people. I want them to spend their time and energy doing things that they feel are meaningful and constructive for them. That's it.
You won't get any argument from me there. I feel a level of guilt for dragging people into the party and saying, come on, let's go, like we can fix it. And I feel like I'm atoning for it a lot of the time, like waving people away with a caution sign, engaging in this leadership race was more of a just going, what are y'all doing to one another down there? Like I've kind of shelved the fact that you are still engaging with this institution in this way. I'm trying to be as supportive as possible of comrades using different tactics. Like, that is, I try to really live that. But I really wish they wouldn't keep drawing people back in there either. I understand that from a person. Like, why would you go into an institution that doesn't want you? I get that. I don't know why they keep going. They do. they hope, but I think there's a level of desperation that exists right now in politics And it's why I do this podcast, is because, like, I want people to know that their political power exists even more so outside of these partisan circles, and that there's, like, so many organizations that could use your time and energy, and that, you know, will get more things done in the end. But I do understand this kind of, we have no political home, they're the only choice. I'm not giving up on the idea of elections as a means for change. And so people will keep wading into these spaces. So we're going to have to keep talking about them and covering them. And hopefully we can do that without losing comrades.
Yeah. Yeah. I want that too, which is why I'm grateful once again for this discussion. And I feel like we're going to wrap up, but I want to say something that you said to Eve Engler the very first time you interviewed him, the day of or the day after he announced in July that he wanted to be the leader of the NDP. You talked to him about how there are a lot of people who really look up to him. And you were kind of, this wariness that you're talking about people going into the party, you expressed that really clearly to Engler. And you said, kind of, isn't this going to be an issue for people if it all crashes and burns in the end and everything doesn't work out? Like, do you worry about people getting really excited about your campaign and then having this huge letdown when what we all expect is going to happen actually happens? And I really feel you on that, Jessa. And it's the part of my podcast with Martin on the breach that we did in October that I feel like many of my critics just were not interested in the fact that I said this, but I was very much in alignment with you. I've seen a lot of young people in the last few years who, through their campuses, particularly in McGill or at U of T or at York or different places across the country, through fighting for Palestine, have gotten politicized for the first time or have gotten to a new level of their politicization for the first time. And I didn't want people like that to see this man who puts Palestine at the front and center of his campaign, who speaks out, who goes up to people who are elected and calls them out on Palestine. I was scared, like you, that people would be like, this is awesome, this is great, without understanding like what the viability and the seriousness of that campaign was, and then themselves also getting really disillusioned when it didn't work out. So I'm going to take this opportunity at the end here to say, if there are people listening to this who were really hoping that this campaign of Eve Engler was going to be included, he was going to be in the debates, he was going to have a bigger influence formally in what the NDP does, don't use this as your litmus test for political involvement. This is one entity, a deeply flawed entity. There are so many other pathways, electorally or not, into getting politically involved. And as disillusioning as this particular experience might have been, it's not an encapsulation of getting involved in politics. And you should seek out other ways to continue. And I guess Eve Engler's campaign's not done yet, for whatever that's worth. I don't know what it means to continue campaigning when you've been rejected. But again, that's for him to worry about and his supporters, not me. I'm just saying this is going to be over at some point, and I don't want the sour taste that could be left in people's mouths to linger so long that they don't stay involved. People can continue organizing in their local communities. People can join organizations that are issues-based or are that are campaign-based. People can continue to be involved in so many ways. We do suffer a lot of setbacks on the left when we organize. This may be one of them for you if you're supporting Eve Engler, but it's not the end of the road. And I hope people stay engaged, as frustrating as they might be with what happened here.
Just not with the NDP.
You weren't going to let that one go, were you?
I was like, please tell me that's not what he means. And I went, no, I very much appreciate this conversation, Desmond. I was anxious kind of coming into it. I don't normally debate on this show, right? I just kind of act as a bit of more of an amplification. I'm always convinced that my audience doesn't actually want to hear from me anyway. They're eager to hear the opinions of the great folks we pull in here, you being one of them. So I very much appreciate your time and just how this unfolded.
I appreciate it too, Jessa. Thank you for the conversation.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content. And if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.